sink or swim. Only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.
Hello, I'm Dan Whedon. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank Seattle podcast, done just a little bit different than we normally do. My co-host Brad Berger is not able to join us, and actually, we're not doing this live. With the coronavirus epidemic, pandemic that's going on right now, we are eschewing our normal live broadcast, and I'm taping this, recording it on Monday, March 16th, with a bunch of colleagues that are here to help all of you, small business owners, mid-sized business owners, CEOs, deal with what we're going through right now. So it's a unique situation. I know you're listening to this on Wednesday, but we're coming to you from Monday. And with the way things have been going over this 48 hours, there could have been a lot of changes. Excuse me. But regardless of that, I've got four really incredible people who are colleagues in my life, and I want to share their wisdom and their expertise because the timeliness of this is really important. It's a global situation that's going on. It's impacting us personally, professionally, and if you're like me and all of my clients, there's concerns about moving forward and how long this is going to go on. And so I welcome you to today's Shrimp Tank podcast. Again, it's a unique one. Let me waste no more time because I want to get these four gentlemen on and asking them some questions that will help you. So let me introduce to you the following people. Phil Simchich is the president and founder of SME Business Wealth Builder, SME Business Wealth Builder Corporation, which is based in Canada, and Phil has clients all over the world. For 26 years, Phil has advised more than 120 privately held small and medium-sized businesses in 62 different industry segments. He's helped them to develop and implement growth strategies, create internal financing and sourcing, external financing, succession planning, and creating and protecting business wealth for shareholders. Phil, welcome. We'll be right to you in just a second. Coming to us from down under is my good buddy, Dean Robinson. He is the family business advisor. He's based in Sydney, Australia. Over his 30 years of working with small family businesses, he has observed what makes successful businesses and what breaks them. Using his background as an accountant, Dean is working with his clients right now to guide them through the financial consequences and opportunities on how to deal with the current situation and how to build a more resilient and adaptable business for the times ahead. Glad we have him. Dean, welcome. I also want to welcome Art Cook. Art is a master of helping clients turn operational problems and opportunities into profits. He has a foundation for building to create long-term capacity, improve efficiency, and reduce costs. Team engagement to get everyone focused on relevant measurable results. Process rationalizing to focus on the most valuable and profitable activities. And he has created visual dashboard sustainability to convert complex data and trends into easily understandable visual data that enhances decision-making and improves performance. Art, welcome. And then finally, my homeboy, I'm going to call him. He's from down in Portland, so we are neighbors, so to speak. Gary Furr is an internationally sought-after organizational development consultant. Gary has an MBA in OD work and over 40 years of C-level business experience, leading organizations from startup to $50 million in size, helping clients to achieve greater success and take their businesses to a new level by increasing top-line revenue and bottom-line profit while enhancing valuation, liquidity, and equity. Gary has performed consulting work in the United States, China, Russia, Thailand, and the European Union. His business philosophy is to make the complex simple. Welcome, Gary. Well, you know, I'm going to take that right from there, Gary, just off of what you said, making the complex simple. I can't imagine anything more complex than a silent and invisible killer of business and lives and everything else that has really gone on over the last 3 to 4 weeks. So what I'd like to do is ask each of you a question. I'll just ask you individually to comment on this. Phil, I'd like to start with you.
Okay. Hello, okay, Dan.
So Phil is there. Phil, I know that you do a lot of work around internal financing and finding external financing. I know how cash is just critical to small businesses. And in a crisis like this, what are some ways small business owners can access cash to deal with the potential loss of revenue?
Well, cash isn't king, it's the ace. So small business owners, medium, mid-market companies, they definitely need to pull all the aces out of the deck. And so there's internal financing and there's external financing. So internal financing really comes from your suppliers, and it also comes from your bankers. So I'll let Gary talk a little bit more about how to be proactive with your bankers, because that's one of his areas of expertise. But really being proactive with your customers, and if they're a large company, they absolutely have cash. And so you need to make sure you get paid based on the terms and conditions of the business you've done with them. Smaller businesses might have a little bit of a tighter time, but if you have an ongoing relationship and you're continuing to serve them and provide them with goods and services, they should absolutely be continuing the flow of money to you while you continue the flow of goods and services back to them. And then, so you've got customers, you've got suppliers, and then internal financing. Anything that is discretionary in terms of expenditures is probably ripe for just being cut right off. Just stop your discretionary expenditures. Everybody is canceling all non-essential travel, things like that. And so you want to hoard the cash you've got, and then make sure that you keep your balance sheet healthy so that you're as attractive to possible to any lenders and bankers that are there. And then tap into your investors as well. So the owners, it might be time to pony up a little bit more cash, and the banks will definitely be more willing to lend to you when they see you putting money into your own company as well.
So Gary, I'll transition to you. Phil mentioned that your expertise is in banks. Let's say you're a small business that has 15 employees, and it would seem that banks are not in this time really interested in looking at. What are some of the things that these small business owners can do that will help them be attractive to banks?
Well, the first thing they do is make sure your financials are in order, that your P&L sheet and cash flow projection are up to date and in order, and that you've been paying attention to them. Hopefully you've built a relationship with your banker before this downturn in business or this disruption in business has occurred. If you haven't already built a relationship with your banker, it's going to be pretty hard to start it, to establish that now. So I always recommend to clients that they build a good, solid relationship with their banker in good times, because when bad times come, as they always do, you need them in your court, because they want you to be successful. But you already have to know them, and they have to know them, like, and trust you.
So thank you, Gary. Dean, I know you work with family businesses, correct?
That's correct.
You know, aside from the revenue matters, which we're going to get back to, we're going to talk about revenue and keeping afloat and all that. In family businesses, I've got to believe that there are other dynamics at play in a crisis like this. Aside again from those revenue matters, what other concerns that would you have about a total effect of this crisis on family businesses?
Well, I think it comes back to two things, Dan, really. The first thing is you've got to keep these lines of communication open at this time. If you're not talking to your suppliers and you're not talking to your customers, and really you should be talking to your customers every couple of days at the moment, just finding out what's happening, then what you're doing is you're actually shutting yourself down. That sort of also means that you need to continue marketing throughout this whole period. I mean, I think this is... Everyone's seeing this as a crisis, and it is a crisis, but it's also a fantastic opportunity to position yourself as someone that is adaptable, it's flexible, you're able to adjust to the situation on the fly. And family businesses are the most able to do that of probably any business structure. Now, what that also means is, in terms of the relationships you've got inside the family, you've just got to make sure that you've got the back of your family, you're supporting them, they're supporting you. You know, things are going to be a little bit frayed for a little while. So one of the conversations I've had around some of the work I've done with some of my clients is, you know, the way we communicate with the family that work with us is not the way we would communicate in a normal environment where we've got staff. We tend to sort of talk a little bit too familiar, and what we need to do is just dial it back a little bit. But it's about the communication, the marketing, getting all of that stuff underway for me is critical to ensuring that we ride through this time.
Okay. I want to bring Art in here. Thank you, Dean. I want to bring Art into here. Art, I know that you are a guru of operations and processes. And in many cases, because right now there could be lack of goods or lack of people, that process is being hampered. Again, we're talking to a lot of small business owners, everybody ranging from 5 employees to, let's say, 100, 150 employees. You know, let's say there's somebody in that. What suggestions do you have for some of those small business owners where the processes are coming under fire because of lack of goods or people?
Well, just kind of talking, bouncing off of what everybody's been saying so far, I don't think the process changes if you're a 50-person company or you're a 10,000-person company. You have to go through the same process. One of the first things I would do is start a triage team that is laser-focused on a group of things. One of the biggest things is making sure that your company is solvent. And the second part is making sure that everything that's happening today is invisible to your customer, to where you're building customer goodwill and you're building that long-term customer loyalty. A key thing is everybody's saying you got to get your arms around cash because you got to be solvent. One of the things that I go after is focusing on your inventory levels. In most companies, somewhere between 50 and 60% of all of their spend is on raw materials. And it is absolutely critical that they stop the flow of what is unnecessary material coming in at times like this and making sure they have the necessary material coming in to support their customers. So creating a laser-focused triage team, you work with your customers, you work with your suppliers, and you work with the organization to make sure you have the right materials at the right time. Bouncing off of what Dean said, I like to say, you know, a recession or a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. This is a perfect opportunity to position yourself with your customers, with your flexibility, with building goodwill. And it's also a perfect opportunity to look back into your supply chain. And if you do things right and you manage your cash, it's an opportunity to either partnership better with suppliers, or if there's the need to acquire suppliers that are struggling and bring them into your umbrella.
Thanks, Art. You know, I did and now I'm gonna open this up. So I will identify if you, or you can identify yourself, or I'll do it. I'm just gonna throw some of these out to the group. I did a video cast this morning, and one of the main things that I led off with was the importance of transparency and communication to employees, communication to customers and clients, communication to supply chain. What are some tips in from your all of your experiences on tone, on method, on resolve? What are some of the suggestions you would have, and anybody can answer, on communications at this time?
I think leaders, you know, I use the term leadership's a contact sport. Leader has to be physically visible, has to be seen, heard, part of the process. At times like this, the organization, whether it's your customer, your internal team, or your suppliers, they want to see leadership. And if you're there, visible, engaging, hearing what everybody says, making decisive decisions, you will weather the storm.
Art, thank you. Anybody else have anything they want to add on, whether it be leadership or communications? That would be great. Phil, I can see you raising your hand. You're the only one I can actually see, so you have an advantage. Phil, what do you have to say?
Excellent. Yeah. So in my experience, stress comes from a lack of information and a lack of control. And so the more information that we share with them about what we know to be factually correct, and we have to be careful that if we're not experts in health, that we're not giving health advice, but we're talking about what is within our scope and our expertise. And so sharing that information proactively so that people have real information. And if you know the plan, then say what the plan is. And if you don't know what the plan, but it's under development, then say you're developing the plan and when you'll have it ready. And then the other thing is lack of control. So people need something to do to be able to take action and exert some control to reduce the stress. Now, this may also explain why the world is going crazy buying toilet paper. And we, for example, have 160 rolls in our house, which is probably, I don't know, 4 months worth. But that's an example of people taking action and taking control to reduce the stress. So it would be much more beneficial than a toilet paper shopping trip to give your employees something specific to do, such as, and building on what we've been talking about, looking for inventory buildup in inappropriate areas to either reduce the inventory or to reduce the inflow. Now, looking for opportunities with your customers that have unfulfilled orders of priority items that can help them. And for us as business advisors who advise and consult to small and medium enterprises, proactively calling our clients and offering to help, figuring out what do they know, what are they good at, what do they see as opportunities, because everyone's right, this is a huge opportunity in this market to be more proactive with your best customers, which will leave your competitors far behind and strengthen the relationship. And it's not just an opportunity to monetize. I'm not saying that. I'm saying really reach out and help and offer to improve your client's condition by sharing your expertise. So provide information, provide control, give people specific things to do that can help to improve their situation and that of others.
Dean, now everybody's putting on their camera because they want to wave at me. I see this is how this group works. I just know that. Gary will probably be on in a second, but I see Dean. So, Dean, I know you're down under in Australia working with family businesses. Let me ask you this, because I've been asked this question before by people in different places. All of a sudden, you've got a case within your employee group. So now it's not if, when you have an employee who comes down with a case of, and there's Gary, a case of COVID-19, just as much as that virus of gossip and anxiety and stress and fear that goes through an organization. What are some things a leader, a CEO could do if, you know, when the time comes that somebody tests positive?
I really like arts. Comment about actually setting up a triage team. I mean, that's really what it's about. Most family businesses are lousy at two things, right? They're lousy at marketing and they're lousy at systems. And really, this is a great opportunity to actually turn both of those things around. So if you haven't actually designed a sort of a coronavirus exclusion policy or employee exclusion policy, whatever it is right now, it should be in place. You should have designed your systems. And you have not only that, you should have communicated that to your staff right now. Your staff and your contractors, because remember, a lot of family businesses don't just have staff. They've got external contractors that they bring in. Then it's actually about being firm. So you've got to look at your employment laws. And I mean, I know the laws in the United States are different to what they are here in Australia. But, I mean, if you're entitled to sick leave, then maybe you need to force people to go home and be sick. If they need to be self-isolated, then what they need to do is whether you need to look at your own laws as to whether that's annual leave or whether it's sick leave. But you also need to think about, well, what's my worst case scenario here? If I actually have to shut down my business, how am I going to ride it through for the next 7, 14, 21 days? I mean, we're hearing some ridiculous stories at the moment about 3 and 4 month shutdowns in some parts of Europe. I think that's a bit overblown myself. But really, it's about the communication. It's about the leadership, being firm, articulating the policies and designing those systems. And as I said, that's a great opportunity to then say, well, hang on, we've got out now a system about, you know, managing a health epidemic or health issue inside of a workplace. What about all the other policies that aren't actually documented in these family businesses? And let's get cracking on them. Let's actually make time. Let's be strategic about this in the future. So many family businesses are too reactive, and this is the opportunity to turn that around and actually have a proactive focus.
Sorry. Hey, Gary, you came on, so I can see it too. I'm going to ask you this question. You are the guru of organizational development. And so we've got CEOs and business owners that things are happening not even on a daily, it's like a quarter hour type of a thing. From an organizational development standpoint, what are some of the daily disciplines a good CEO is going to do during this high time of volatility until that curve kind of starts flattening out on that volatility, not necessarily the viruses, but what are some of the daily disciplines that a good CEO will be doing right now?
Communicating with their staff and their employees on a daily basis, saying, this is new territory. We haven't experienced this yet before. Here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to see how it works, and we're going to adjust the plan as we go. You have to admit that you may not have all the answers. You can do their help. So let's work together in a concerted effort on this direction and see how it goes, and we'll adjust as we go. Because I think we're in uncharted waters for many CEOs. They haven't experienced this before, so it'll be new to everybody.
Okay, thank you. Kind of again, just an open forum type thing. I'll take whoever answers first. As everybody knows who's heard me, I do a lot of discussion on risk management, on risk leadership, on risk strategy. And we try to do a little bit of the old crystal ball at times when we're looking at potential frequency and severity and likelihood. And this wasn't on anybody's likelihood scale. It just wasn't. The shutdown of such proportions wasn't there. Social distancing, I'm a believer in it, and I believe we're doing the right things. But the reality is, whether I like it, I think it's good or not, social distancing is in the heart of everything right now. For those people running businesses that are client facing, especially, what type of recommendations and wisdom can you give them? Art, I saw your hand up there. I'll go ahead and shoot it at you first.
Well, I travel a lot seeing clients, and I'm working with a client in the Chicagoland area, and all the restaurants are shutting down. And what's happening is they're only doing takeaway or delivery. So how does a restaurant keep their customers engaged with coming up with unique menu choices, unique delivery, to where you still feel that you still want to get food from your best restaurants, but you're doing the social distancing? And I think you create some sort of 5-star or some sort of marketing campaign that's driven all the way to a deliverable, and the customers will be there today and they'll be there tomorrow. The same thing with, you know, delivery of take Amazon, UPS, or whatever it may be. There's ways around all this, and we can be creative, and you don't lose the human touch.
Phil, I'll ask you the same question. Can you follow up on that? Social distancing, client-facing businesses, some suggestions and wisdom.
Sure. So my wife is in healthcare. She's a chiropractor, and she helps people in both acute and chronic pain. And so their clinic is taking proactive steps just to have everybody wash their hands and then clean all the surfaces in between each patient. So there's more time and attention to the little things so that she can still help her patients conduct and go about life as normally as possible. So it's really being proactive and preventive with social distancing, but when you are having an interaction with another human being, to take the necessary precautions to provide value to them.
So I'll throw in, before I go to some of my guests, I'll throw in, we're talking about restaurants. I had a conversation with one of my restaurant clients just last night when the word came out in the state of Washington, which was followed by a lot of other states and cities after that, of the shutdown of restaurants and bars and all of that. And one of the things I mentioned to them, because they have a huge parking lot outside, as I said, food trucks are takeout. So, you know, what can you do? Can you bring something in that is food truck like and start telling the world, hey, I'm here, we're at a great location? So those are some of the types of things that small businesses can do to be nimble. And Gary, I want to go to you really quick on this one, because being nimble, you talked about taking the complex and turning it simple. Some of these small businesses have a great advantage that they're not aware of, and that's the ability to be nimble. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, small businesses are definitely more nimble than large businesses. Large businesses are hard to turn in a different direction because they have so much momentum. Smaller businesses are more like a little speedboat they can turn in and adjust quickly, which is to their advantage. I just came from having lunch with my friends who own a high-end restaurant here in Portland, concerned about their staff, the safety of their staff, concerned about the safety of their guests, and actually their own health safety as well.
Sure.
And they've decided to close the restaurant for 2 weeks to eliminate any chance of anybody coming into the restaurant that might be infected, because you don't know oftentimes, and jeopardizing their own health and the health of their staff. So they've decided to close their restaurant. It would be difficult for them to do a food cart situation where they're located. I don't think it could sustain the size of their restaurant over the long term with the cost. So it's a more difficult situation when you're a high-end restaurant.
Right. Right. But there might be some ways that they can look, if it extends past 2 weeks, where they might be able to do some other things potentially as well.
Yeah, they're going to definitely take the proactive approach and say, look, we're concerned about our safety, your safety, the clients, the customer safety, so we're going to close. And there's a marketable reduction of people on the street here in Portland. Because, you know, Portland's, a lot of people are working from home now, so right. They're actually not going to the restaurants.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that jeopardizes their future as well.
Right. So, Dean, I know you work with accountants a lot, and I know accountants, at least here in the United States, just from the timing, they remain busy. But let's talk about professional services in general. I had a number of professional service folks of different ilk, different industries on my call today. Talk about those non-client facing, where you don't necessarily need to have somebody coming in, but there's still some challenges that this has. What if you're running a client or a non-client facing professional services business? You talked about marketing. What are some other ideas that you have to help them continue to make sure that they are getting that new business and keeping clients in place?
Well, I mean, firstly, if they already don't have some sort of work from home policy in place, it'll have to be in place before too long. In the professional services environment, it's probably the most adaptable to working from home, particularly with high speed broadband internet services, mobile phone, telecommunications, you name it. That again creates sort of, I suppose, flexibility in the workforce there. There's term thing about this. I think we're going to see a big shift now. I think we're going to see whether it's professional service firms, corporations, you name it, move away from having big box type setups. I think we're going to see a lot of people working from home. I think we're going to actually have much bigger sort of workspaces in the home that'll be devoted to this sort of situation now. Now that creates some other issues obviously over time. But Dan, you know, that's an interesting point or an interesting question you've raised, because in terms of the marketing, you can still market via phone, you can still market via Zoom, you can still market via Skype, you can have, you know.
Let me ask this. I'm going to ask this to all of you. I didn't mean to interrupt Dean, but I kind of did. So that's what we do here on podcasts, especially the Shrimp Tank. So one of the concerns I hear from folks is this is, you know, especially with what we've seen in the United States market, this is a recession. People are holding tight to their money. In fact, I think I heard Phil mention holding tight to the money. So there's a lot of consultants, there's a lot of professional services that are concerned that while they offer a great service, that people who might normally use them are holding tight to their money. How do you overcome that? I'll open it up to whoever speaks first.
Well, firstly, you communicate with them, right? Secondly, you offer them flexible payment terms.
Okay.
So you don't charge them up front. Have a monthly payment plan, whatever it may well be, to actually ease their cash flow. You're allowing them to then ride out the current situation, access your services, and essentially offer them deferred payment terms. You've got to be in front of them.
Anybody else?
Dan, it's Phil. So if you're dealing with a brand new customer who's not familiar with them and you can provide some professional value to them for free,
right,
that will definitely go a long way in tight situations like this. Plus, it'll help to establish your credibility and strengthen the relationship and then convert them into a paying client. But we want to be able to take care of people here within our professional realm. And so that does usually require a contract and a clear understanding of their goals and objectives and constraints, and then how we can help them build on their strengths to achieve their successes. And then the other thing is really to help people quantify the value and the results that they provide for their clients. Because when we can state specific metrics and successes, then it's a lot easier for people to make an investment decision, a return on investment decision, because the results are more obvious and more tangible and more specific.
And so before I go into our last phase, and this is what happens when I don't have Sue and Tiara here as our great producers, I would be remiss and I would be wrong if I didn't thank our sponsors of the Shrimp Tank podcast. This is, again, an unusual situation, but we have some great sponsors that I have not gotten out there yet. Fort Ludlow Resort is a fantastic shrimp peeler sponsor. Diana Smelland is a past guest, and they are far enough away, Diana would tell you, that it's a great place to go visit, go out to the marina, maybe even do some golfing out there. So thank you, Fort Ludlow Resort. We've got West Sound Workforce, Monica Blackwood, another past guest. They are doing some great work with placing employees, and that might be a very important task here coming up. We have the Kitsap Economic Development Alliance has back again as a sponsor. They are helping businesses locally in the Kitsap County and surrounding counties as well. SJ Graphics, past guest, Jana Kramberger. She's actually been pretty busy. She's a sign builder, guys. She's a client of mine. She and her husband create signs, and they've had a run on people needing signs regarding coronavirus, of all things. So she's been busy doing that. Thank you, Jana. Kitsap Sun is one of our newest sponsors. David Nelson is a future guest, and I'm feeling bad because I think I'm missing somebody, and I'm going to have to go take a look while I ask some final questions. If I have missed you, I will make that up somewhere along the line. I've got to go look at my notes. But thank you to all of our shrimp peeler sponsors. Without you, we couldn't be doing what we are doing. So thank you very much. All right, guys, we're in my normal podcast, which I'm sure you'll be listening to. You should be subscribing, because where can you subscribe? Well, Brad would have told you can subscribe on iHeartRadio. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on Google Podcasts. And if you're going to take the time to do that, go ahead and rate us a 5, I think, especially after this robust conversation we've had. In our podcast, gentlemen, we do a thing called Plead the Fifth. And I'm not going to make you plead. You can't plead the fifth. There's no fair catches on this. But I'm asking you some questions, and I want you to just to come out and just give us a quick story on. And I think it's a great way to end this, because I know you'll pick some stories that will resonate with people. I'm going to start with Gary, because he's my buddy down. He's down under, Phil. He's a really down under. Portland's down below Seattle. And so I consider Gary a down under. You know, good day, mate. Well, Gary, I want you to tell a story.
I'm sure I can repeat that.
I want you to tell a story, Gary, of a crisis. Obviously, there's not one as big as this potentially, but a crisis that you were part of a business, whether you were the CEO or helping somebody, without names necessarily, but a crisis that seemed all but lost, but somehow got turned around. Talk about a reclamation process.
Well, crises are actually sometimes a blessing in disguise, because It forces businesses to evaluate what they're currently doing and how they're doing it, and is there a better way to do it? It also tends to clean out peripheral players that are dabbling in the margins, and so just the serious businesses tend to survive. And I remember the big downturn we had in the United States there, and a business that I was working with, and sales dropped off by a third right away. And so we had to do some real serious evaluation as our expense lines. What were we spending money on? What was a need and what was a want? And how could we save money and manage those expenses proactively without the understanding that it was going to improve anytime soon? So you focus on marketing more aggressively, focus on sales, and focus on managing the expenses to make sure the bottom line comes out. So I think that it's actually sometimes beneficial when we have a crisis, in terms that it does tend to force you to clean up your processes and your systems and your practices that you've been using, and you may have got lazy, especially with the robust economy we've had and manufacturing especially doing extremely well. I think it's easy to get lazy and complacent. And when you're making a lot of money, it's easy to get that way.
Okay. Dean, same question for you. Give me a story. Tell me a story about either you, and I prefer you. Tell me a story about a time that you've had to overcome another type of crisis, how you did it, and what lessons could be learned here.
I was involved in a professional practice myself where we had to make some decisions quite quickly about offloading a number of staff. You know, there was a bit of a crunch starting to happen, and this was about 15 years ago now. You have to make quick decisions. You have to be upfront with people and tell them, and this is what we had to do. We had to be upfront with people and say, listen, things are not looking that great. We're going to have to offload a few people here. And a few people ended up being about 20% of the workforce, which was a reasonable number. And we had to basically just tighten the belt a little bit. And what we did, though, is we just kept ahead of the numbers all the way through, which is a bit of a reference back to what Gary said earlier in the conversation here. And, you know, Dan, we got through that and we built that business in the next year. We probably added revenues of about 10% to where we were at that time with 20% less staff. It's what Gary said as well. There's a lot of fat sitting in businesses, and it just maybe as horrible as this might sound, maybe this is a fortuitous occasion that we're experiencing right now for businesses just to stop and refocus on how profitable they are, how profitable they could be, and where they should be heading in the future.
Art, thank you, Dean. Art, what's the most unusual, weirdest, something that to this day, it was a calamity at the time, might even just make you laugh today to look back on it, because sometimes that happens. Give me kind of a unique, weird crisis that probably something you remember right off the top of your head.
Unique and weird. Wow, that's a good stretch.
How about that?
You know, just coming back to unique and weird, where you have odd things that happen at customers, where all of a sudden you're on a quality hold and you're forced into a crisis situation. Simple things of, you know, somebody leaving cigarette butts in trays that go to a customer and the customer sees that, or a bottle cap. And it turns into be a full-blown sort, and how do you get through that? It's nothing compared to what we're seeing today, but it does cause a ripple event of a crisis going through the building. And, you know, you don't understand, was it intentional? Was it sabotage? Or somebody just flipped a bottle cap or the cigarette fell into it? But how do you manage through that? And that's so much more simple than what we're seeing today. I don't even know how to answer that. I can't think of something off the top of my head.
Well, you and I, when we sit down for a libation later, I'm going to make you do it. So you're going to have to think one up. Phil, I know you've had multiple experiences as an entrepreneur and a number of different businesses you've been part of. Give me the strangest crisis, even though it's not going to be something like this. Give me the strangest crisis you've ever been part of.
I'm not sure it qualifies as the strangest, but it was definitely the most prolonged and most emotional, because when I was a teenager, my parents and my aunt and uncle bought a business, and they were looking for a place that would house sorry, house them and six kids, so 10 people under one roof, that we could go to a lake in the summer where we camped usually, but they had time off, they were civil servants, and they wanted to spend time at the lake and have a business. So they looked at a laundromat, and it made good money, but there wasn't room for 10 people to sleep in there. So they found a 22-room lodge, and they took the financial statements to the accountant, and he said, don't buy it because it doesn't make any money. But their goal apparently was not to make money. It was to house 10 people at the lake. So they bought the business. The bank financed the business because at that time, the banks were more interested in collateral and credit history and civil service pensions or whatever backing things up rather than the viability of the business. Fortunately, bankers have evolved significantly since then. So they bought a business. I was a teenager. They bought a business that didn't make any money. And the best part, interest rates were 23% per year.
Wow.
So they mortgaged their houses and liquidated some equity in the house and put money down on the lodge and then bought the lodge. And so once they figured out it wasn't making money, then they really took care. Now, they were the employees that the owner managed, and we did have some other staff that they took great care of to retain the staff, and then they focused on customer service and providing the best experience possible. So not just the tangible, it's a bed, a clean bed and a place to stay, but they made all the intangible factors of that experience as positive as possible. So I think that's a really good lesson for all of us as business owners and people in business to focus on the overall customer experience and to make both the tangible things high quality and high value, but to make the intangible parts of the experience that may not be primary or even secondary in a decision, but to make them as positive as possible, to make them as emotionally comforting as possible, and to make them demonstrable and visible and tangible to our clients so that they can actually feel and perceive the overall value and experience. And that will help us. We're taking control over information in terms of things that we know our customers value, and we're continually increasing and enhancing the value. So as Dean said, this is a great opportune moment for us to really step up. Cut out some of the fluff and the things that don't have any value or that suck cost or cash or time, and focus on really providing a great experience and a great valuable product or service for our customers.
We're on the stretch run here. By the way, before I go back to you for your, this is kind of like a debate when they had 17 people debating. You're going to have one final thing, but it's going to be fun. We're going to turn. You know, we've had a lot of serious conversation. We're going to turn it fun. I did not miss any shrimp peelers, so all of you shrimp peelers, we're good to go. Who I did miss was our commercial clients, Ideal Life 360. That's my co-host Brad Berger, and then the studio sponsor, who's me, Whedon Unleashed. So I guess that's what happens. I was thinking of others first. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So listen, guys, we're going to finish up with a little bit of fun because this is, again, all kind of part of the plead the fifth, and it's going to be a quick plead the fifth. Just I want your initial response, and I'm not going to let you off the hook. After you give it to me, tell people who have been listening how to get in touch with you, whether it's email, whether it's website, just a quick, actually I'm going to have you do that first and I'll give the plead the fifth. So Gary Furr, how do people get in touch if they'd like to learn more about you?
Gary Furr, that's GaryFurr at GaryFurrConsulting.com.
Okay, Gary.
Gary Furr Consulting.
Gary Furr Consulting. So Gary with F-U-R-R, two R's. Here it is. Here's your plead the fifth. Boxers, briefs, or boxer briefs, and why?
Neither. None of the above. And I plead the fifth.
No, I told you can't plead the fifth. So am I understanding that you're going commando? Is that what I'm hearing, Gary?
Commando, man.
Okay. You are going to get so many hits onto your website now that you'll be going sideways. We've got a guy going commando in Portland. All right. That's... I knew you'd bring it to a good close. Way to go, Gary. All right, Dean, I'm not going to ask you the same question, but I am going to say if there's a family business out there that wants to learn more, and I know you, all these guys write great newsletters. Dean's hits home because it's a family business oriented. How can people find out about you?
DeanRobinson.com.au. Remember the .au for Australia.
Okay. So listen, Dean, we all have one. I know you have one. Who is your celebrity crush?
I don't know. You know what? I really like Dame Judi Dench, but she's like my mother's age.
I love it. I do too. Now, Gary's going nuts. If you could only see Gary at this point, he's just about lost his mind.
Okay. He's going to fall out of his chair.
But you know what? That's one of my favorite. I love that. That's great. Hey, Dean, thank you. Art, how do people get a hold of you?
Website is ArthurKOCHMGD.com. It's Arthur Koch or KOCHMGD.com. There's an info to drop me an email and get a hold of me, please.
Okay. Art, I know you are a wine connoisseur. I've learned that from you. In fact, I think you're a connoisseur in a lot of things, especially related to food. So here's the deal. All the skills that you have as a consultant have vanished, and you have to start over in the food industry. What kind of restaurant would you open and why?
You know what I'd love to do is have a small restaurant in a community where you have local people that have a night to themselves. You know how you have family and friends and they all cook an awesome meal? Well, you rotate it among different people and you pair it with different wines. So say, for instance, Dan, you make great short ribs. Every Tuesday night, it might be, you know, Dan's night of short ribs. Then Phil might have a night where he makes paella. Phil comes in and does a paella night and just rotate it to where people do their best dishes, small with maybe about 7 or 8 tables, and you leave it at that.
All right. I love it. And I think next time we get together, you might have to do something like that for all of us. So, Phil, you're hitting cleanup. Tell people, and it's Phil Simchich. I want people to know that Simchich. He's going to tell you how to easily find him on the web.
You can find me on the web at smewealthbuilder.com, and that SME is in small, medium enterprise, so smewealthbuilder.com. And I have to tell you, Dan, my battery is starting to fail, so I'm not sure I'll be able to get through your question. You better let her rip quickly.
I'll let her rip. So what do you like to binge watch? What do you and your wife binge watch? What is your favorite binge watch?
Well, since I can't plead the fifth, I have to advise you that my wife has control of the remote control in our house.
Well, what does she like to binge watch?
Oh, my God. Any home renovation show. But I therefore have an iPad with the great Apple AirPods.
Okay. All right. Hey, guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate this. We will hopefully soon be back and doing our live broadcasts from the 505. Actually, it's the Whedon Unleashed studio. I guess I'll get one last plug. For Phil, for Art, for Dean, for Gary, thank you for joining me today. That is all from the Shrimp Tank. And because I'm Brad today in this regard, as he said, to become a shark, we all start out as shrimp.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When you take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.